Hi, once again, welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. It's the gardening. Right, it's gardening show today, but you can talk about your garden. Joining us, a few familiar voices. Bob Graves is a horticulturalist and co-owner of Fatigan's Nursery in Latham, New York. He's also been an avid hands-in-the-dirt gardener for 40 years. Fred Breglia is director of horticulture and operations at the Landis Arboretum. He's actually the director of the whole darn Landis Arboretum in Esperance, New York. Greg Ward runs Ward's Nursery, a lawn and garden resource in Great Barrington, Massachusetts. Now, you can call us. That's a great way to do a call-in show. 1-800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551. Or you can do it the newfangled ways. You could tweet us. At WAMC Vox Pop. You can go to our Facebook page, WAMC Radio, and there'll be a Vox Pop post there, or you can post your comments at the bottom of today's show page. It's Vox Pop, WAMC.org/Vox Pop. You can comment there, or you could email us, VoxPop@WAMC.org. I like calls. 1-800-348-2551 is the number. Gentlemen, thanks for being here today. Nice to have you here.
It's good to be here.
Yeah, great to be back.
All right, we'll kick off the show. Before we get to the phones, this is a handwritten note from our call screener, Anonymous Sandy. Here we go, and I quote, "I have a begonia that there are leaves and flower buds that suddenly turned poop brown." Nice turn of phrase there, Sandy. Did I do something wrong? Can I save it?
Could be a lot of things. Yeah.
First thing that comes to mind is botrytis,
yep,
which is just a kind of common mold that begonias can get.
All right.
They don't like to be wet, so if they're too wet, that often happens.
Yeah, so drying them out, cleaning all of that brown, whatever you want to call it, off.
Yeah.
And then literally drying them out so that they're in a nice sunny spot with good air circulation may be all you need to do. There are some things you can apply, fungicides you can apply to sort of limit the potential spread of it. But the first step would be cleaning it up.
How would you clean it? Good.
So you would take maybe some scissors or little pruners and just cut away anything that's brown.
Okay. What if it's everything that's brown?
If it's everything that's brown, it's time for a new one.
Okay. All right.
Yeah, and one point that will be just to make sure that you don't, the stuff that you prune off, you want to make sure you dispose of in a garbage. Don't compost that. It could spread disease and problems. So get rid of that material, whatever you're taking off, the quote-unquote brown stuff.
Okay.
And a few home remedies like chamomile tea is a good all-purpose fungicide.
So that just does something to the pH, or is it a very mild acid, or what is that?
So it affects the you know, little living fungi on the leaves or the spores. So it's I don't know what it does, Ray.
Okay.
It's just the chamomile tea you would normally drink cooled down. You wouldn't want to apply it too hot, of course.
All right.
And then spray that on your plant.
Okay. Well, unfortunately, Anonymous Sandy was taking calls while you answered that question, so she'll have to listen to the tape later on. Greg in Kingston. Greg, you're first.
Yeah. Hi. How you guys doing?
Good.
I have a dogwood tree. It's probably about 100 years old. And in one of the last hurricanes, another tree came down and broke a branch off at a main branch, and it left exposed an area 2 to 3 feet long that exposed the middle core of the tree. And after that, some months or so after, there was all this orange liquid coming out of the wound and basically covering the entire tree. And now I'm trying to figure out, did I not do something by covering the wound or whatever? What do I do to save this? It's been around for such a long time.
Yep. Did you say that you covered the wound or you did not cover the wound?
I did not. I didn't do anything to it but cut away the dead parts.
Okay, that's actually good because it's been proven that these sealers and paints and different types of tar products that you can be applied, they call themselves pruning paints and wound sealers, wound dressing, all of those have been proven to actually not be effective in terms of helping the tree deal with that wound. Trees are similar to people in a lot of ways, and they're obviously different in lots of ways. And one of the ways that they're different is that trees will seal wounds up or they won't, but people will heal wounds. So the key is that tree has its own mechanism to try to close that wound over. Now, on a young tree, on an injury like that, usually pretty rapid, you would see callus tissue formation. So you're going to see growth sort of engulfing that wound. And on a young tree, it would sort of happen quite fast. Again, plants and people, similarities here. Older trees are like older people. They don't heal, or I should say seal, as fast as younger trees. So on an older tree, it could take much longer. You have definitely done the right thing, which is nothing. Leave it alone. And one of the things you could do is you want to look for is to see if that wound is actually producing a little bit of growth kind of around the whole area. And if it is, that's a good sign. A little supplemental fertilizer in the spring or fall, and more growth could be induced and therefore cover or seal that wound. That's the goal. Once it seals, you're in the clear.
So, what's the orange material that he's seeing?
My guess is probably just some sap flow. It's mm-hmm. probably just hitting the air and kind of turning a funky color. That's mm-hmm. my guess, unless mm-hmm. some maybe
it
secondary
was a bright
fungus.
Orange.
Yeah. It's a little, another fungi growing on
that's it. That's what I was going to say. It might be like a secondary fungus growing on a sap that's coming out.
But this happened, you said, a couple years ago.
Yeah, it happened in Irene when that hit.
And so now it's sort of a nice, dry, gray-brown.
Yep.
And it doesn't catch any moisture. There's no little pockets that would hold moisture.
No, I don't think so. There might be some bug holes starting in the core. I was trying to watch for that.
And if you poke around in there, it's not soft. It's pretty hard.
That all sounds really good. The only thing I would tell you to look for when you get back to that tree is see the entire edge of that wound and whether you see new growth. It's going to look like sort of a lumpy mass engulfing the entire wound. And if you see that, that's great. If you see a few spots that are kind of ragged where the break occurred and you don't see any kind of new growth occurring there, then you could actually trim some of that broken material and try to help close that wound. They call it wound tracing, but right now, from what you've said, it does sound pretty good.
What kind of fertilizer should I put on it? I could do something like that to help it.
Yeah, I would recommend like a balanced fertilizer for a tree like that. It's an older tree, so we're not trying to necessarily make it bigger. We're just trying to create more of a stable growing environment. So something that I would say is complete fertilizer, which means it has nitrogen, phosphorus, potassium. And also you want to see on that bag with micronutrients. So you want a complete fertilizer, ideally organic, with micronutrients. And often they'll even give you beneficial bacteria and things like that in the bag, which helps to convert that material and make it readily available for the tree. So,
Greg, thank you.
Thank you. Yep, Thanks very much.
Yeah, you have it. You got it.
Let's go to Marilyn in East Eldridge. Marilyn, you're on.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I have several questions. If you can answer them, I'd appreciate
it. All right.
The wild roses in my garden just bloomed, and they're beautiful to see, but the interior, the very center, has many tiny black insects crawling around, and I've never seen that before, and I don't know how to handle that. Can you tell me what I could use, maybe a fungicide, an organic one?
The interior of the flower has black insects?
Yes, and the flower.
And is the flower itself being eaten? Or is there any damage to the flower at all?
I don't see any damage. I mean, I just saw it yesterday for the first time, and I was in shock because I've never seen it before, and I didn't know what to make of it. They're probably nibbling away, but I don't see any damage at this point.
I'm going to suggest that you wait and see if there's damage. I bet they're not hurting anything. If you can see them easily moving around and they're small and black, they're probably not feeding on the rose. They would, if they're going to do damage to the rose, they're going to be either covering the closed buds, and those would be aphids, and they wouldn't really be moving that much, or they would be eating the leaves, and the leaves would actually start having holes in them.
No, none of that exists. Yeah. All right, I'll wait on that. I wanted to know, I have a dogwood tree that's probably close to 20 years, and it's a beautiful, it blossoms beautifully every single year that I've had it. And for some reason this year, very few or none at all exist, and it's a huge tree. And I wondered, is it because of this past winter? I did fertilize it in the fall. I haven't done anything in the spring. Is there anything? Is this a biennial thing?
Well, does the tree look healthy in terms of foliage right now?
Yes, absolutely.
So it just didn't bloom this year.
Yeah. Does it have anything to do with the winter weather that we had?
It's possible. The really cold temperatures, which this year is colder than normal, or maybe it's actually more back to what we would call normal, but in any case, it was colder than what we're used to this year, and same for the trees. And a lot of times, winter injury, there's been a lot of odd plants this year, showing a lot of different
symptoms. Pretty common on dogwoods that the flower buds are not as hardy as the rest of the tree. They actually can be killed at temperatures that the rest of the tree won't be hurt at. So I wouldn't worry about that too much if the rest of the tree looks good, you should be fine.
Yeah, you should have flowers next year.
And often, too, if the tree flowers heavily one year, so if it was a very good show last year, it's often a light show the next year, and sometimes get nothing.
Yeah. All right, Marilyn, thank you very much. The number to call here is 1-800-348-2551. We're joined on The Gardening Show by Bob Graves, Fred Breglia, and Greg Ward. Let's take one more call, Zach, before the break. Doe and Wendell. Doe, you're on.
Hi, I have a question about using treated wood to border vegetable garden beds. And I have a chance to get a couple of telephone poles that are being replaced, and I was told that they would be that something in them would be harmful to the soil.
Don't do it.
Don't do it. Okay.
That was easy.
Simple answer.
Yeah.
What's in them?
Creosote, some derivative of a preservative, which too many heavy metals in there.
Yeah, a bunch of different compounds, arsenic among them. Yeah.
Exactly. Not around anything that you're going to be eating.
Okay.
Okay. Well, thank you.
Thanks a lot, Doe. All right. With that, we'll take a short break. It is Vox Pop. It is The Gardening Show. And we'll be back.
Support comes from Hadley Garden Center, Hadley, Massachusetts, offering annuals, perennials, vegetables, trees, and shrubs, indoor and outdoor plants, and garden and landscape information. HadleyGardenCenter.com. Empire Exhibits and Displays, Albany, New York. Custom exhibits, interactive displays, and commercial casework for trade shows, events, museums, and corporate interiors. EmpireExhibits.com. The Pirates Lakeside Grill on Nassau Lake. Local, organic, grass-fed beef burgers, Milwaukee hot dogs, bison, and fish fry. Open Thursday through Sunday, noon to 8. PiratesLakesideGrill.com. Lori Stillwell, CPA PC, providing tax and accounting services for businesses and their owners in Saratoga Springs and beyond. StillwellCPA.com. And The Linda, WAMC's Performing Arts Studio, presenting Esterada tonight at 8 p.m. TheLinda.org.
Vox Pop on WAMC Gardening Show today. Bob Graves, Fred Breglia, Greg Ward, and yours truly, Ray Graff. The number to call is 1-800-348-2551. We go to Joel in Cohoes. Joel, you're on.
Hey, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I have a blueberry bush I put in last year, and it didn't do anything. And I late fall last year, I cut what I thought was dead back. Right now, I got some green leaves that sprouted up around the base and one scraggly branch, it's about a foot and a half long, that has some leaves on the end. What can I do? I mean, I'm assuming I'm not going to get any fruit or blueberries off it this year, but what can I do going forward?
So do you have a nicely mulched area around the plant with no weeds or grass competing?
Now I
system?
Do. Now yes, I don't think I did that last year.
So that's a really good thing. Fred may not agree, but I would go ahead and fertilize it right now. I don't think you want to wait at this point for a plant like that till spring or fall. We do a lot of fertilizing of woody plants in season to sort of perk them along, and this sounds like this one could use some of that. And then, the flowers would have only been on that one scraggly live branch because they have to winter over from last year. So if you didn't see any flowers on there, then you're not going to get any fruit. Also, they tend to cross-pollinate, I believe, though you can use the same variety.
It's better to have different varieties. It's difficult to get blueberries with one plant or with several of the same variety. You need different varieties. Yep. And you also want to check your pH.
That's
because they
say.
Like an acidic soil. They need to be under 6 to do well.
The color of the leaves is a normal green, a really pale yellow green, or a dark green?
I would say it's a normal green.
Yeah.
Nothing that stands out of the ordinary, I guess.
That's good. That's good. That means, your soils are probably fine. But other than making sure that it has a nice place to expand its root system, giving it a nice application of some fertilizer to create or to push that younger growth from the base that will now get large, it has time this year to set flowers for next year.
And then you want to avoid pruning that in the late fall this year as well.
And consider planting another variety.
Ooh, yep.
What about that scraggly branch? Should I just leave it or should I trim that back?
Yeah, leave it until you have some really nice strong branches next year.
Okay, cool. Thank you very much.
You got it.
Joel, thank you very much. It's Vox Pop on WAMC. 1-800-348-2551 is our number. And let's see here. Looks like Wendy in Greenfield. Wendy, you're on.
Hi. So I have an acre and a half of property that's got a bunch of invasive species on it. I just bought the property. I'm putting a house up.
Okay.
And I want to know what I could be doing. I'm putting down cardboard and wood chips to the best of my ability. Where I can. And the other thing is that there's a sycamore tree. It's not thrilled, and I want to help it get healthy.
All right. Well, the first thing I would ask you is the do you know what types of invasive plants you're dealing with? Are they?
Yeah, they're those roses, the wild roses, the Japanese roses, and there's wild honeysuckle.
Okay.
Blackberry.
Okay, a nice
there was
mix.
A lot of popple trees on it that they were all taken down.
All right. Well, the first, and I don't know your situation exactly, but the first rule is if you could mow things or brush hog them, cut them, then...
Right. Right now the property has been cleared, so there's nothing on it now except for a couple of trees that are standing because it's been cleared and graded.
Oh, okay. Okay. So you want to prevent these from coming back then?
Exactly.
All right. So as you see them come back, and if this was recently done, everything that's going to regrow is going to be kind of regrowing from stored energy of sorts because it doesn't have any leaves. So you were talking about root systems that are going to be sprouting. And if you can get back out there and remow them, recut them, anything that you don't want, that is going to use up a lot of stored energy and weaken the root system. And a lot of control can be done just by repeatedly cutting, especially woody invasives. If you can get to that.
I've been pulling up rose roots.
Yep, well, you're definitely off to a good start with the controls. Now, smothering them in other areas, like you've said, covering them with material, stuff like that, certainly going to help.
I think the woody ones, though, with cardboard, is tricky. They're pretty aggressive, so I think cutting
is going to be better for the woody.
It's one of the best ways. It's just continued mowing.
Yep. You just got to keep at it because it's going to use up its energy, and if you do that a number of times, in the initial beginning, be persistent. Keep after it. It will get easier. It'll be hard at first, and then it'll get easier.
And it could be years.
Yeah, it could be a few years. Yeah.
That's what I've been being told. Mm. But will the cardboard and wood chips help? In certain areas?
Yes. I think if you have some areas that you're, there's no woody plants or the pieces have been torn up, they're minimal. Sure, that's where the cardboard's going to work better on herbaceous things, non-woody things.
Yep.
Okay, so if I'm clearing it first, I should clear it first, then put down the cardboard, and then put down the chips.
Yes.
Yep.
And if I want to do raised beds, like for gardening vegetables and whatnot, I can do the same thing, clear it, put down wood chips, and then put down cardboard, and then put down new earth.
Yeah, and you may not wouldn't need the wood chips at that point, maybe.
I would not.
Right. Not for...
Because you're going to fill the box.
Exactly, with soil.
Okay.
Yep.
And what about the sycamore? What would it like to be happy? I cleared out everything underneath it to the best of my ability.
When you say it's not happy, what do you mean when you say not happy? Is it showing like leaves that are kind of crinkly or deformed or...
Yeah, and there was a big popple tree growing next to it, so only one side of it has really thrived. I have seen new growth on it since I've been there, so in the last 2 months.
All right, that's good. Well, the one thing I'll say is clearing out around it is going to help the tree because it has less competitors. Now, the other thing is there's a disease called anthracnose. It's a fungal disease, and this year it seems to be around quite a bit, depending on what area you're in, but it's definitely around, and for the most part, it doesn't really kill your tree or hurt your tree. It sort of deforms a lot of the foliage. And long term, what it does is it'll end up making the leaves fall off towards the end of the summer, early fall.
It will be very dramatic if it happens and you'll be very worried about it, but it's not something that's going to cause you a real problem.
That's right.
Okay.
Yep. And if you really wanted to stop that from happening, there are companies out there that could do a systemic injectables, like literally like giving a human being a shot. They would give the tree a shot, and it would help to clarify that. But it wouldn't actually, if you did it this year, it wouldn't stop what you have. It would be more preventative. But I usually tell people, the tree can live with it. So usually, you know, if the tree can live with it, let's let the people live with it too.
All right, Wendy, thank you. Just
one quick question. Okay. Woodchip around the base of the sycamore, would that be a good thing?
It would help it, but no more than 3 inches. So not more than, too much mulch is a bad thing, and no mulch on the stem. So the trunk comes down, hits the roots, and there's a flare. A root flare, that trunk flare, you definitely don't want to build up material on. A lot of times you'll see that in landscapes. I call it volcano mulching, and that's not good. It's mulch piled up around the stems creates problems, rot, and stresses for trees. So mulch wide, not high.
Thank you so very much.
Thanks, Wendy. I appreciate the call. Fern in Wappinger Falls. Fern, you're on.
Yes, hi. I have a question. Can you transplant clematis bushes?
Yes.
Yes, any time of the year, or should you wait till the fall?
Tomatoes, are only going...
No, not tomatoes. Clematis.
Clematis.
Okay.
Spring would be best.
And you can transplant them in the spring?
Yes, they're...
Early.
Yeah.
Okay, and can you trim them down in the fall?
It's better to trim them down in the spring and then in April... nice and early, and then and then transplant them.
Okay, and two other things. Hydrangeas, do you just leave them? Excuse me, I'm sorry. Do you just leave them and let the stuff grow on the old wood, or do you trim down the dead wood at the end of the summer?
Depends on the type of hydrangea. But in general, the recommendations are for paniculata types, the ones that tend to be more white, you would trim those after they flower. The macrophylla types, which are usually pink or blue, you can do a little bit of trimming in the fall and a little bit in the spring, both.
Okay, and one more thing, I promise.
Okay.
Lavender, is it okay to trim that down to the very short in the fall?
I like to suggest that you do some cleaning up and trimming it fairly short, but not quite that late. It's maybe around the middle of August when it's looking a little tired and leggy.
Okay.
And that way it has all of September to regrow and form a nice, cute little crown again that will winter over better.
Okay.
Okay, great. Thanks a lot, my dear.
Thanks, Fern. We appreciate the call. 1-800-348-2551 is our telephone number. 1-800-348-2551. It is Vox Pop, and it is The Gardening Show. Let's go to Lynn in Shelburne Falls. Lynn.
Hey, I'm so glad to take my call. I've had so much success with you guys in the past.
Oh, great.
I have some tall phlox that have actually reverted back to the kind of purple color. But they've been in my garden for many, many years, and they didn't bloom for a long time, and the leaves get kind of yellow and spotted with brown and on the bottom. And so I thought it might be a nematode or whatever it was. And so I put some root treatment on it, and it hasn't seemed to help, but it does bloom now.
All right.
Well, I would wonder about good air circulation, good sun. Is it getting enough light? That's sort of what I think of when I hear about a plant getting yellow leaves from the base, that something is shading it, maybe itself.
Even with the little brown spots.
Yeah, there is a fungal issue.
Yeah, tall phlox are very susceptible to powdery mildew.
Yep.
They get it almost all the time if there's any dampness in the air.
But it's typically a white mildew top of the foliage rather than underneath. So
there's
just
a few funguses that will take out like some of the lower foliage on older variety phlox, like the tall ones, not like so much the cultivars. So my
don't
guess,
usually kill them; they just make them look ugly.
Yeah, kind of wears them. A lot of people get rid of them. My mom had a big garden like that as well. That a lot of that sort of got that way.
Is there any way to fight it?
Cultural controls, keeping airflow, always a good idea anytime you have fungal problems. Years like this year when it's been wet and hasn't
minimize any overhead watering. You really don't want to get phlox wet if you can avoid it.
Yeah, if you're doing irrigation, and definitely good point. If minimize the amount of watering that you're getting, because this year it's been so wet. Anyways, airflow, get rid of any of the material that looks spotty, brown.
There are some organic fungicides that you can use, too, that are pretty effective. But fungicides have to be put on before you see the problem.
That's right. Yep. So that'd be like maybe next year type of thing. But this year you could keep cleaning out any of those leaves with spots. Get rid of that material. Don't compost it. Throw it in a garbage bag.
All right.
Get it off site. And that would actually help to create some more airflow through there too, getting that stuff out.
And then just lastly, is this clump of phloxus, you haven't dug up this phlox, this phlox and, or renovated it any time, right? It just has sort of been there for a long time spreading?
I put it in my garden years ago, and it's...
And you haven't moved it?
It.
Yeah, you haven't touched it. You haven't dug up the garden and replanted it.
Actually, I did a couple of years, but it's been like this ever... No, it's always been like this.
Okay.
It's got the little yellow on the bottom, and it's got little brown spots on it.
I mean, if the brown spots are part of the yellow and they're down below... it's probably, you know, not a big deal. It's
okay. It,
especially if it's giving you some nice color now.
Okay. Lynn, thank you very much.
May I ask another?
Well, a quick one, sure.
Okay. I tried to transplant my poppies, and I failed again. Should I cut the leaves back when I do it?
Oriental poppies?
Yes.
Yeah. So it's really hard to move those. They tend to not like it at all. It's really it's really best to do it late summer.
Oh.
So this is not a good time to do it.
Okay.
What should happen now is you just let them rest and they'll sort of fade away and pretty much disappear, and then they'll reemerge in September, and that's when you should try to transplant them. You move them. Ideally, they should continue to look better after you move them, and that's one of the ways you'll know if you did a good job or not.
Right. One more thing, Ray, please.
Okay.
I have a lot of sawdust chips, you know, from a chainsaw. Can I use any kind of sawdust chips for mulch?
You're talking about like the shredded chains? You mean like almost? Yeah, it's like sawdust. No, you know, that I would not recommend using for mulch. Fresh wood chips, and there's been a misconception. In fact, there's been a huge study, which I won't take up a lot of airtime talking about. But the International Society of Arboriculture did a lot of tests on different types of mulch, including the raw wood chip. And they found that the raw wood chip that you can get, as long as it's not got any kind of bacteria or fungal problems in there, assuming it's clean, does not rob nitrogen out of the soil. Because our wood chip, when it breaks down, well, and that's been the misconception, is that people always know that in the breakdown of this raw wood product, it uses nitrogen. So with a big fat wood chip, it's not going to pull the nitrogen out of the soil because it gets what it needs from nitrogen out of the air. But with a little tiny sawdust, that can get into the soil profile. And when it gets into the soil profile, it can take nitrogen away from your plant. So sawdust, not good, unless you, of course, let it rot. And you let that age, and when it starts to turn black, then it would be quite nice mulch.
Okay.
But let it rot.
Thank you so very much.
You got it.
Bye, Lynn. Thank you very much for calling. The number to call here is 1-800-348-2551. Joined today by Bob Graves, Fred Breglia, and Greg Ward on this gardening show for the month of June. Ken in Hudson Falls. Ken.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
A lot of great information I've gotten so far. I got a quick question. Won't take a lot of your time. I've got a fungus issue that shows up on my squash plants kind of late in the season. Want to know if there's something I can do to fix that?
It's white, is it?
It's whitish, yes. And it almost dries the leaves out.
That's powdery mildew, again, would be my guess on that.
Yeah, okay. For sure.
Again, fungicides are best applied ahead of time before you see the problem, and there are several organic ones that would work well for that.
And can you recommend any particular organic one that will help? Because we try to avoid putting any chemicals on our garden.
So I think there's a brand name called Serenade.
Serenade, which is Bacillus subtilis, if I'm not mistaken, is the active in that.
That is effective and organic. Usually any of the sulfur-based ones, which is not a brand name, but that's a product with sulfur in it, and that's generally labeled as organic. And so
occasionally copper can be used as an organic.
I was going to say copper sometimes as well. I guess I know that it works to eliminate some of the
Recognize that organic does not mean not hazardous.
Very good point. Excellent point.
And as I mentioned before, I know, you know, it's would be a lot on a squash plant, but chamomile tea is pretty...
Here we go with the chamomile tea again.
I don't know. Somebody's got stock in tea.
I personally don't drink a lot of that, but it's very effective on powdery mildew on rosemary in the wintertime. It's probably one of the simplest things to do to maintain that. And, you know, you could just take a sip of tea and spray your squash at the same time.
Okay.
Well, that's what I'm saying. We can commune with our garden.
There you go. You know, one other little trick, too, that's another real easy environmental one, is that actually with powdery mildew, which is weird because you think of fungal issues and mildews and moisture, but actually when you have the leaves and it's on them, if you get a hose and you have your spray head and you actually kind of forcefully spray that white substance, it actually tends to wash actually some of those spores out of there, and it's not going to be a, you know, I would say a thorough control, but it could help. And I don't mean put it out there every day, but maybe like once a week, kind of forceful spraying of those leaves.
Yeah, and there is also actually a cultural issue that we're probably not addressing, and that is good air circulation, number one. That really helps. B, your plants, you know, you're saying the end of the summer, which is great because your plants have stretched for a long time and they're pretty tired at that point anyway. So planting a second crop of what, especially if it's a summer squash, planting a second crop around the, you know, early part of July, middle of July will give you sort of a new batch to pick from, and you can just do away with the old ones.
Yes.
And
it almost seems to dry the leaf out, you know, like it gets crumbly.
Yep. And then
they're kind of done at that point.
Yeah.
Yeah.
If it's getting shadier at that point, it's more likely the mildew will stick.
Okay.
So should I also avoid top watering as well?
Sure.
Yes.
Yes.
Yep.
Okay, terrific. Thanks so much. I appreciate your help.
Ken, thank you very much. 1-800-348-2551 is our number. One more call before the break. Amy in Albany. Amy.
Hi. I have a question about a wisteria I've got growing on a pergola. It's about 7 or 8 years old. Normally, I trim it in the fall. Last year, it never got trimmed, and this year, it's climbing up the side of my house and looks like it's taking the shingles off the roof. And I was just wondering what kind of trimming, aside from the branches that are going on the electrical wires and stuff like that, how I should trim it if I have to trim it now, if that'll affect how it flowers and so forth.
Yeah, I mean, I think actually the timing is still just right, just in time. If you want to do some severe, you know, it's a spring blooming woody plant, and pruning post bloom is what's recommended. So it's already bloomed. It's it's still early enough in this part of summer that it'll grow out and ideally set flower buds again. So prune away, and you can be fairly severe. So if you want to.
Yeah, wisteria actually likes sometimes pretty heavy pruning. In fact, the best pruning.
In general, Fred, wouldn't you say that this is not a bad time to prune, just generally speaking?
I would most definitely agree with you, Bob. Yeah. In fact, this is the, I'm giving a pruning workshop tonight, free to the public, Village of Cobuskill, if anyone's interested, 6 o'clock at Public Library. But, yes.
Where is that?
This is the Cobuskill Public Library, 6 p.m., and I'll be there. It's free to the public. Anyone can come. But, in general, this is an awesome time to prune. Summer pruning, fantastic this time of year.
Wow, that was a great bit of promotion. Boy, Fred, you are a real professional. Well done. 1-800-348-2551. It's Vox Pop, the gardening show. We hit the home stretch coming up.
Support comes from Edward Garbasek, Certified Financial Planner, Havoc and Wealth Strategies, Wilbraham, Massachusetts, providing customized financial retirement strategies for those approaching or in retirement. HavocandWealthStrategies.com. The United Way of the Greater Capital Region, Albany, working to create opportunities in education, financial stability, and health in the community. Live United, give, advocate, volunteer. UnitedWayGCR.org. The 1850 House Inn and Tavern, Rosendale, New York, historic boutique hotel offering romantic Hudson Valley getaways, 11 guest rooms, modern amenities, expanded outdoor deck overlooking the Rondout River. The1850House.com. Williamstown Theater Festival, Williamstown, Massachusetts, their 60th season opening July 2nd with June Moon, directed by Jessica Stone, on the main stage. Box office now open. WTFestival.org. And the Montessori School of the Berkshires, working to foster independence in an experiential learning environment, offering 8 weeks of summer programs for ages 3 through 12. BerkshireMontessori.org.
Fox Pop on WAMC, The Gardening Show. We are here with Fred Breglia of the Landis Arboretum, who will be, his roadshow is actually appearing in Cobuskill tonight. Greg Ward of Ward's Nursery in Great Barrington, Massachusetts, a regular engagement there at that venue. And Bob Graves of Fadigan's Nursery in Latham, New York. Fred, is it a great show that you have in store for everybody tonight?
You know, they always are, Bob, right?
Yeah.
But
Who's opening?
I'm the opening act.
Mr. Green Jeans.
All kidding aside, if you're in the area and you're free tonight, 6 p.m., it's no cost to you. Cobuskill Public Library, we're going to do a pruning demonstration and a pruning lecture.
Nice.
And it'll be a two-hour workshop. I'm going to kick it off with a sort of some slides and some how-tos and therefore, you know, this and that. And then we're going to take that outside and actually look at some hands-on pruning.
Cool.
So for anyone else that wants info on what the Landis Arboretum is doing, we have a tremendous calendar of events lined up. We have a lot of stuff still going on, everything from concerts to tree classes to herbal wisdom workshops and how to treat a lot of herbal remedies for different things.
Chamomile tea, no doubt.
Chamomile tea is certainly on the list. And arsenal of plant classes, children's workshops. And I just say, if you're on Facebook, one of the great ways to stay in touch with the day-to-day things of the Landis Arboretum is to like us on Facebook. We have a Facebook page. And you can also visit our website, www.landisarboretum.org, for the full register of all the events for the year.
That's it?
That's pretty much it. I kept it real
you're
simple.
Smooth, man. I don't even need to be here. Well done. Scott from Denver, Colorado, but who's in North Greenbush. Scott, you're on.
Hi, how you guys doing?
Good.
Great. Well, you know, I got a question about my plants back at home. I grow 6 marijuana plants per Colorado state law, and 3 of them have spider mites right now. Being in Denver, it's pretty dry climate. So I was wondering if you guys have any suggestions for that.
Insecticidal soap.
Yeah, soap.
Is a pretty good all-around insecticide and miticide and something.
The trick with something like soap or oils are that they're contact killers. So if you don't kill it, if you don't hit it, you don't kill it. And spider mites usually on the underside of the leaf.
The underside.
So you got to get the underside of the leaf in order to get control of it.
All right.
And a lot of horticulture oils are paraffin based. So, but there are some vegetable based ones. Mm-hmm. You could look around for those.
Gotcha. And it's pretty sunny. Do I spray it any time of the day or
evening?
Mm.
You would do it. You would want to do it so that it's, you know, in general, any plant can be affected by getting sprayed with some insecticide or fungicide when then the sun comes out and it gets pretty warm. So that's why you would do it in the evening so you have a, you know, 10 or 12 hour run of
cooler
before it happens.
Well, that's an interesting call. Scott, thanks a lot. We appreciate the Colorado perspective. Rocky Mountain High. Sue in New Marlboro. Sue, you're on.
Yes, I have 2 questions. One is 4 years ago, I purchased a wolf-eye dogwood, and the leaves were light green with a white border. Mm-hmm. And I purchased it in the fall, and it was covered with walnut-sized red balls that looked like they had black cloves just put into them all over. I'm assuming that's where the name came from. Since that time, I never had them again, except last year. The entire tree by the end of the summer was covered with these little balls that were about the size of a grape, but they were still only light green. And suddenly, within a week, they all turned dark brown and fell off.
Yeah,
and the tree is healthy.
The those weird-looking balls are basically the fruit. The wolf-eye dogwood is a variety of Coosa dogwood. And it's a variegated variety, but any of those Coosa dogwoods, they all will get that red fruit. So the fact that they blighted, what happened was they turned brown really rapidly or black. Says it to me that they got some kind of blight in there that took those fruit out, but it didn't hurt the actual tree. And that's not uncommon with a lot of fruit trees. Even like crab apples get the thing called black rot, which is a sort of a mummification of the actual crab apple. And again, you know, doesn't hurt the tree at all. And the only thing with those fruit is that you're not going to eat them. The animals and birds, I think, do actually browse on them quite a lot. But
I think you can make wine out of it.
Yeah.
Really?
Not tea.
Tea, wine. Yeah. Chamomile tea.
I never have.
Dogwood wine.
A friend of mine made some wine sometime, and I tasted it. It wasn't bad.
Yeah.
But it's such a striking appearance. That's what I really wanted it for. Does that blight mean that I will never have these again?
No.
And can I do anything to prevent that blight?
My recommendation would be to leave it alone because it's too insignificant to try to worry about spraying something to try to stop that.
Okay.
And most years it probably would not happen, but it would just have to be, you know, kind of like the tomato blight.
It's a weather-related.
It's a weather-related thing. Yeah. It's environmental. And most years you'll be fine, but every once in a while you'll lose them. But it'll be more. You'll probably get them more than not.
Is your tree in flower now?
It is not in flower yet. No.
So it's hard to tell on those because the leaves are so white and they're almost the same color as the flower. But if you look, it should, if it has flowers for this year, if it has some buds to come, should be showing up now. You should see a few flowers.
I'll take a closer look. And my second question is, someone gave me a rather large gardenia that is full of closed buds. I'm putting it in the house in a window that it has not a direct sun, but very bright light. Will I have a good chance of keeping that through the winter?
Can you keep it outside for a while?
I can.
Yeah, put it outside in the shade. They're tufted inside. They're much happier outside in the shade.
All right, but I probably won't have success with this in the wintertime then.
Depends on how bright your window is.
Okay.
So inside, the sunniest spot you have,
yes.
And outside, okay. A nice shady spot.
Okay. Yes.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you, Sue. The number to call is 1-800-348-2551. Fred in Ware, Mass. Fred, you're on.
Yes, hi there. How you doing?
Good.
I have a question about a very old apple tree. I've got a farmhouse that's about 130 years old, and as far as I know, this apple tree may be as old as the farmhouse. It's huge. It's got a 2-foot diameter trunk on it, and the problem, it's great. It puts up thousands of apples, doesn't need any spraying. But the problem is they're putting in a new septic tank, and it's only about 8 feet away from the edge of the leach field, and they want to take it down, so it's not too close to the leach field because they're afraid the roots are going to, you know, damage it. But I'm just wondering, after 120, 130 years, are the roots still going to be growing out, trying to, like, you know, do any further damage to the existing leach field? Because it's still working fine. There's no problems with the leach field. But I'm wondering if there's, if that's something I should. I just like to take my chances and leave the tree there, you know, spare the tree and not worry so much about the fact that it might damage the leach field down the road.
Yeah, I would, personal, and, this is an opinion, of course, but I'm obviously more for the trees than not. So that being said, I would say a 130-year-old tree, first off, based on your size description, I would agree with you that that is definitely a 130-year-old tree. And those are, again, plants and people, similarities. Well, elderly mom, she's not getting too much bigger too fast. Same as the apple tree. It's not really getting that much bigger. It really just looks for a stable growing environment, and that's really what you're looking for. And it's not directly, you're basically just taking a leach field out and you're putting a new one in the same place, correct?
No, they're going to leave the leach field, just replace the tank.
Oh, just replace the tank. Okay.
Yeah, but the tanks are further away, so they're just concerned about the leach field being close to the apple tree. But it's been there for 40 years or 45 years.
Yep. So don't worry about it.
Yeah.
So
I would leave your tree alone. But the one thing I will point out is that you want to really be careful about them, that being the contractors, driving anywhere near the root system of that big tree. You want to try to keep them away from the root system. And if they have to get close, I would suggest putting down some, like, board, something to distribute the weight. Because what will happen is on an old tree like that, if they get close to that machine and they are starting to compact that soil, that could do a lot of damage, a lot more damage really fast, and it's hard to undo that kind of damage. So prevent compaction, and when I say prevent compaction, try to keep them, if they have to get near the root system in one little quadrant, don't let them drive around it. And the roots of that tree will go out almost 2 times the canopy spread in terms of feeder roots. So they're all over the lawn, and they've been there for a long, long time. Just prevent compaction when they get the work done.
All right.
One other brief question. Is there some way to identify the species? My guess is it's one of those old heirloom varieties that they don't grow around here much anymore. I don't recognize
it. When the fruit is ripe, go bring it to the biggest farm stands you can find with a lot of apples.
Yeah.
And compare them.
Start walking
through
there.
Got to see the apples.
Yeah. Take a look at it. Taste them.
Yeah. Right. Now, failing that, is there a way to identify it by, like, DNA or something, or sending samples to somebody in the mail? Or
I don't know. Maybe Cornell has something like
that. I have no idea.
Yeah, my best recommendation would be, and I get these questions from time to time, people bring me apples over at the Arboretum, and, what is this, what is that? But I always say that, the best people to talk to are the people that are in the industry, and the people that are in the apple industry, kind of like what we had said before, even if you don't want to go compare apple to apple, bring that apple, try to talk to one of the old-time growers that'll be at one of those nurseries or one of those apple orchards.
Yeah.
They're going to be way more apt to be able to say, this is this variety or that variety. So that's your best bet. Talk to some of the top people or the older timers at these orchards, and they might have some good answers for you. But you're going to need that fruit. Bring the fruit with you.
Right. Okay, well, thanks for the advice.
Thanks, Fred. We appreciate it. Now, how old will an apple tree get?
They could go hundreds of years, a couple of hundred years.
Really?
Yeah.
And the apple's still
They
produce?
Often will, yeah, yeah. A lot of times they'll be hollow, but that doesn't mean they're unhealthy. They're still produced for years and years.
All right, let's go to Peggy in Greenwich. Peggy, you're on.
Yes, hi. I have a stand of Rose of Sharon, and they're about 25 years old. This spring, they were absolutely not blooming or sprouting any leaves whatsoever.
Yep.
Now, as it rains and rains and rains, they are getting from the bottom up. It seems like they're coming back, and there are green leaves. But how far behind do you think Rose of Sharon could be this year?
They can be notoriously late to leaf out after a severe winter, but it's also getting pretty late.
Yeah.
I would say at this point that if there's a lot of it that hasn't leafed out, I don't know what you guys think, but I'm not optimistic at this point.
If it's leafing from the bottom and not from the top, then you may consider in the next few weeks pruning all that top growth off.
Okay, and so prune it down to where the green is growing.
Yes.
Yep.
And just discard all the branches that are not blooming.
Yes.
Yep.
Thank you very much.
Thanks, Peggy. We appreciate it. Another satisfied customer. Leah in Lake Luzerne. Leah, how are you?
Hi, I'm doing great. How about yourself?
Good. How's the weather at Lake Luzerne today?
You know, it's sunny and bright. It's a beautiful Adirondack day.
It's a lovely place to be. All right, you're on the air.
Well, it's not the best gardening place, but we've been, our half-acre vegetable garden's been, it's been pretty good to us over the years. We haven't had too many pests, but this year we seem to have sprouted an abundance of grasshoppers. Hmm. I mean, grasshoppers, we've been going out with sticky traps on our hands and just kind of trying to catch them that way. And we've tried that with not much success, and they've really just devoured everything from the basil to the tomatoes. We can't really get chickens, but I'm wondering if you have any other suggestions.
Do chickens eat grasshoppers?
Oh yeah,
oh yeah.
Guinea
yeah.
hens too.
Ducks.
Yeah.
No, that sticky traps on the hand. That was pretty interesting. What about
another use for duct tape?
I mean, on some things, some of the lower things, you clean them up with your sticky traps, and then you could use some floating row cover and just seal up everything that's low, you know, so you can do all your peppers and basil and squashes.
Yeah.
The tomatoes, you could do your tomatoes. You sort of have to tent them at this point.
I'm surprised the birds haven't come in to take
surprised.
Them out.
Normally they are controlled, you know, through birds and other critters. Usually you don't get that big of an outbreak with those guys.
I was taking a walk the other day, and I was walking through a field, older field, and there were a lot of grasshoppers. And there's certainly not anywhere else I've seen, but I think there's little outbreaks of them.
Pockets. Yeah. They're even eating we have sour cherries. They're eating our apple trees. And of course, as they get bigger, they're doing more and more damage.
So you have a little plague going
on. Yeah, plague
there.
Of locusts.
They're good with chamomile tea, too.
You know.
That won't work.
Thanks, Bob. Thank you.
Very Adirondack. Yeah.
All right. Well, Leah, good luck.
I mean, physical barriers, you know, just keeping them off the plants until, because they're going to pass, you know, eventually they're going to move on.
Yeah.
And you want to keep whatever you have intact until then.
They will move on?
I would say they should move on. It would not be all summer long.
Consult the Bible. Okay. It'll tell you when.
Thank you.
Leah, thanks a lot for the call. Let's go to Irma in Pittsfield. Irma. Irma, are you there?
Yes, I am.
You're on.
I have a pear tree that's about 3 years old. It's really in good shape and everything. But it gets these little, like, pea-sized. You think they're going to be pears, and that's as big as they get. Is that an ornamental tree?
That's an ornamental. It's a calorie pear, Pyrus caloriana. Yeah.
It's not much of a
No, those little pea-sized pears, though, the birds absolutely love them. So it's a great wildlife plant.
Yeah, but they'll never bear fruit?
Nope.
No, it'll never bear fruit
Nothing
that you're going to want to eat. Yeah. Nope. It's a little calorie pear. Looks like a pear. You know, in every form except for the fruit.
Just ornamental.
Just very small ornamental.
I had a pear tree. And then I have a peach tree that has peach leaf curl.
Mm.
Suggestions?
There's not a whole lot you can do about that now.
I know.
You can clean it up in the fall. You can use, I think you can use copper sulfate.
I think copper is a good fungicide. used, you know, before you see the problem next year.
Yeah, yep. as a fall cleanup spray, and then as a spring pre-leaf, pre-bud spray.
Okay.
So last year I had it, but I had an abundance of peaches. This year I have it, not too many peaches, so I must be catching up with it.
Again, peach flowers got hurt this year because of the cold weather late, too.
Okay.
So next year,
all right,
maybe.
Thanks for your help.
Yep, Irma, thank you very much, and thanks to everybody who called in. All right, Bob Graves at Fadigan's Nursery, what's your website?
www.fadigans.com.
All right. And Greg at, Ward's Nursery, obviously. Yeah,
it is. Wardsnursery.com. Yes, it is.
Very nice. And Fred Breglia?
We're www.landisarboretum.org. Also, like us on Facebook and email fred@landisarboretum.org.
And again, you'll be in Cobleskill at the library tonight, 6:30, or is it 6?
6 o'clock.
6 p.m. Well, thank you, gentlemen. We appreciate it. Thanks to everybody who called in. Support comes from Mohonk Preserve, New Paltz, with a summer calendar of weekly group hikes, volunteer fairs, classes, public programs, and special events. MohonkPreserve.org/events for information. The Honest Wheat Food Co-op, located at 100 Watervliet Avenue in Albany, offering local and organic produce, groceries, specialty foods, and more. HonestWheat.coop. Eagle Hill School, Hardwick, Massachusetts, a college prep boarding and day school for students in grades 8 through 12 with learning disabilities, dyslexia, ADD, and ADHD, EHS1.org. And the Legislative Gazette, newspaper in print at legislativegazette.com, online for additional daily news and updates on New York State news, coverage on Albany's political community for over 32 years. Thanks again, everybody, for calling in. Sorry if you didn't make it through. Thanks to Zachary T. Malloy, our engineer. Your phones were answered by Anonymous Sandy, our producer, Jessica Blaustein Marshall. I'm Ray Graff. Tomorrow, it's a Food Friday. Stay tuned now for a news update.